fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the main outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the main outdoors.
Welcome to the main outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. Thank you one and all. And welcome to Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest running outdoor talk radio program. And we invite you to join us for the next hour. We have an exciting and interesting program tonight. You know, we had Dale Wheaton on a couple weeks ago. We called it, it was a humorous program. Tonight we're serious, aren't we?
We're very serious. Yeah. You better pay attention, folks.
Yeah.
This is a big one.
We're going to introduce our mystery guest in just a moment, but first the crew who make the show possible every week. Oh, by the way, this is a call-in talk radio program. If you'd like to be on our show tonight, number to call is
1-800-966-1039.
And you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 103.9, 101.3, and 94.1, right,
nope,
Jim?
95.1. There you go.
All right. Thanks for the help. Anyway, we're going to introduce our guest in just a moment, and we do have a very informative program tonight. I guarantee it. We'll introduce him in just a minute. But first, the crew. Tonight, behind the toggle switches and the controls there in Studio B is the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, Assistant Engineer Number 2, Norm Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome aboard.
Get your deer yet?
No. I put out a trail camera today.
Well, that's a start.
A little behind, but yeah. Put a trail camera out today.
Plenty of time. Waiting for the rut, right?
Yes, that'd be a better time, actually.
You bet.
Cold weather would be better. Then you could keep it longer.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And to his right in the engineering studio is our chief engineer, emeritus, Mr. Jim Layton. Take a bow, Jim.
Well, good evening, folks. Pull up a chair. What a great show tonight. By the way, Paul, I've been counting in a four-mile radius from my house. I've been counting between 10 and 16 deer in the afternoon.
Ooh, no kidding.
Out in the fields.
Yeah. Can I come over?
You most certainly can.
All right. Thank you. I'll be over.
You sure can.
All right. Scotty Bates is on the way to Florida? No, I guess
no,
he's going to deer camp.
He's
going to deer camp?
Yep. He's up to deer camp.
And then he'll be on his way to Florida.
Yeah.
Right.
He's
putting
in a new bathroom up there, I hear, and a new shower.
Okay. And last but certainly not least, our esteemed co-host. He's a registered master Maine guide. He's an author of 3 great fishing books. And he's known as Mr. Trout, Bob Lehman.
I appreciate it, Paul. Thank you ever so much. And you didn't have to get your deer yet, right?
Oh, no, too early.
You've seen some, though.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to spoil things.
Did you get a permit?
No. Well, no, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
Diane did. She got one for Wayne, over in the Wayne area.
Okay, well, that's good enough. There's one in the family. That's okay.
Who's that little canid you got there with you?
That's my little girl. That's my little girl with me tonight.
So we have also, in the studio, we have Precious.
We do.
Bob's cute little dog here, Precious.
Yeah, right in my lap.
That's a perfect name.
She's a good little gal.
It is.
I'd like to introduce our guest tonight. He was with us not that long ago, but he's back by popular demand. We had the phones ring off the hook when this fellow was with us back in the summer, and he's graciously agreed to come back and join us again. Tonight, the subject, of course, is ticks, and the hunting season is full swing. A lot of you are in the woods, and this is a good time to be conscious, to be tick conscious, and we're going to talk about ticks tonight. This is Professor Jim Dill, who's from the Cooperative Extension Service with the University of Maine in Orono, and we know from previous visits that Jim knows his stuff, and he's here to answer your questions and tell us more about ticks. Jim, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to have you here.
Right.
And again, if you have any question related to ticks, Lyme disease, or any of the other associated illnesses, and if you'd like to ask a question of Jim, you may do so by calling our number. What is it again, Bob?
1-800-966-1039.
Thank you. And we'll be with Jim in just a minute. First, Outdoor Digest time. Brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. Want to remind you again, Northwood Sporting Journal is recruiting for part-time advertising salespeople. If you're interested, you can call my partner at 732-4880. Just ask for Vic. And again, we will train you and we provide generous commissions. Let's see. Deer safety reminders, just again, the deer season is in full swing. And that's good news for those of us who like to get out in the deer woods. Right, Norm?
Yes, sir.
You bet. And the leaves are off the trees now, so it's beginning to actually look like hunting season.
Yeah, it was raining leaves, especially yesterday.
It was, yeah. So anyway, you know, the usual rules apply. Remember, muzzle discipline. Always make sure you know where your rifle is pointed. Make sure the safety is on. And you know that. We've been through the drill before, but some people get careless. So remind yourself again to think about hunting safety. It's very important. We've got a pretty good hunting safety record, and we want to keep it that way. So hunt safely. And again, if you're in the woods, and particularly if you're in the big woods, and we had a visit a couple of weeks ago from a warden pilot who used to spend his time searching for missing hunters. And remember what he said, that if you get lost, most what hunters do is they start walking, and they walk for 15 to 20 miles and wear themselves out. If you get lost, admit it to yourself, sit down, stay put, get a fire started, get out in the open, and show your face, and the warden pilot will find you. Almost guaranteed, right, Jim?
Especially with that blaze orange.
Yeah, he was saying that blaze orange has just revolutionized searching for missing hunters.
So, yeah, once he's airborne, that smoke really shows up.
You bet. So anyway, again, so we hope you have a safe, sane hunting season, and we hope you bag that big buck of your dreams.
You know, Paul,
yeah,
if you treat your weapon as if it's always loaded,
you bet.
You'll have a lot less accidents.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, I think it's time now for Bob Lehman's favorite music.
Ready, Bobby?
Ever ready.
I'm a big boss fan.
Now.
Yeah.
There you go.
And you work for me.
Okay, now.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh,
this
man. Pretty bad. We have to... Jim Layton playing the part of Arthur Fiedler in there, directing Bob Lehman.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going on in the great fishing world, Bob?
Well, you know, a lot of fishermen have quit now. They're waiting for ice to form. It should be another month or two, probably.
Yep.
So we have a few quick tips for you to store your gear, and a lot of people will be storing their gear, and cleaning store your fishing reels, and you look for loose screws and missing screws, and if it's developed a screech when you wind it, that means oil leaded on the terminal. So use a oil cloth or a paper towel with a few drops on it, let it soak in, and then wipe the terminal off. Don't put oil drops on the terminal. It might get into your fly line if it's still on the reel, okay? And then store it away in a pouch where it's good and dry and away from any moisture or anything.
What's a terminal, Bob?
The terminal is the winding part of the reel that the inside reel part goes around.
Okay.
And when you turn your handle, it goes around the terminal. Okay.
All right.
You get it.
Yeah. Thank you, Bobby.
Okay, Bill. Okay. Okay. And you should stretch your fly line out if it's developed a memory. And a lot of people know that when they take it out of the box and put it on your line, it generally has a memory, which is all kinds of coils in it. And the best way to take care of that is put it around a tree. A nice tree long way from you, or a pole, and get you or your buddy to help you stretch it out. Give it a good hard pull, and it'll take the curling right out of it. And you can do the same thing with your leader material. And do not use cleaning fluid of any kind. Always use a little soap and water to clean your fly lines, okay? And if you own a bamboo fly rod, here's one, Paul, for you. If you own a bamboo fly rod, old, new, or antique, and it has acquired a bend or a twist, and most of them do. You pick up an old antique, and it's
right.
The way to straighten that out is you hang it, the sections, in a closet, one section next to the other, take it apart and hang it up in a closet by the ferrules or the guides, and let it set there out of the way, of course, for several months, and let the natural moisture in the air work, and it'll straighten that out.
No kidding. Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, and one more, putting away fishing rods with sections. It's usually a good idea to rub ferrules in your head, hair, for a light coating of grease that's in your hair naturally.
What if you don't have any hair?
The grease is still there, Jimmy, believe it or not.
Yeah, what would Norm do?
The grease on the sides.
Just kidding, Norm.
Okay, that gives it a little light grease, and you'll find that the ferrule will slide in and out a lot better. And if you find that a rod comes apart when you're fishing with it, use a little beeswax on it. Have you ever done that, Paul? Put beeswax on a ferrule?
I can say never in my 65 years.
Has your rod ever come apart while you're fishing it?
Yeah, that's happened.
Well,
yeah.
You want to keep it where it is,
yeah,
and come off easily and on easily and not come off, put beeswax on your ferrule.
Oh, all right.
That's the male section, of course.
Okay, yeah.
And you can find beeswax in most sporting goods stores in Maine and all over.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
Thank you so much. Great report. Appreciate
that. Thank you so much.
All right. Again, if you just joined us, our guest tonight is Professor Jim Dill, who's an expert on ticks, and we'll be talking to Jim and invite your questions in just a moment. But first, we have an outdoor trivia question to dispose of, and if you get the right answer to this, I'm going to make sure you get a matted print of one of my watercolor moose paintings called Deb's Knig, and it has a retail value of $49.95. This is on beautiful archival paper. You know what that is, right? Right, Norm? You're shaking your head. Well, it's really nice paper.
Deb's Knig, but the paper, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. You know what Deb's Knig is, right?
Sure, there's a number of them.
And you know what a moose is.
Yes, I do.
But archival paper, you have a little trouble with that. Well, we'll explain it later. But it's good stuff.
Right.
It's good stuff. Anyway, here's the question. Bob, you want to do the question?
Sure, I'll
All
do
right,
it.
Bob Lehman is going to do the question. He'll judge the veracity of your answer.
And
In
Maine, legally, how is the fall turkey hunt different from the spring turkey hunt?
All right, 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we have two callers standing by who may have an answer to the question, how is the fall turkey hunt different from the spring turkey hunt? Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good for an old guy. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
What do you think the answer is?
Well, I know in the spring you can only shoot toms, and in the fall you can shoot a tom or a hen.
Okay.
That's part of the answer,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's another angle here. Do you know what it is?
I know in the fall there, they don't come to calls as readily as they do in the spring, and you can also use a dog to hunt them in the fall.
That's it. That's a winner.
Okay, you've won.
Excellent.
You've won a, I don't know if you're a fan of sporting art, but anyway, you're stuck with it. I'm going to give you one of my watercolor prints of a moose painting called Deb's Knig. I think you'll like it.
I've seen Paul's
It's a prints. Watercolor.
They're beautiful.
And it's a print, and it's worth $49.95. I will mail it to you, but I'd like to have you stay on the line, and Jim will get your mailing address, and I'll make sure it's mailed to you, okay?
Thank you much.
What's your first name, sir?
Charlie.
Yeah, where are you calling us from, Charlie?
Garland.
Okay, Garland. Yeah, great. Yeah. Anything else on your mind tonight?
No, I'm just still trying to find a deer that...
Yeah.
A lot of does, no bucks yet.
Yeah, I know what you. I feel your pain, but it'll happen. Yep. We got to be patient. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, don't give up.
You
don't
bet.
Give up.
All right.
Yep.
Stay on the line, okay? And Jim will get your address, and I'll make sure you get the painting.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
All right.
All right. Let's get out of business. Again, our Professor Jim Dill, who's a man who knows ticks, and we had you on back in the summer, I think it was, Jim, and we had an awful lot of people interested in calling. We had a lot of people who. We could have done a two-hour show, and I know ticks really, Lyme disease is an issue that is becoming more and more well-known here in the state of Maine. And you've been working, how long have you been working with ticks?
Well, interestingly, you know, I've worked at the university for a long time, but very truthfully, it's only been the last 7 or 8 years that ticks have really been really prevalent throughout the state. We had them in southern Maine. I grew up in southern Maine. I didn't know what a tick was, and I spent all my time in the woods crawling around and stuff. So ticks weren't actually even thought of. And if you did ever run across one, it was just a dog tick, which no one gave any thoughts of up this way. So
in this neck of the woods, we're talking about the last 10 years?
Oh, yeah. No more than that.
No more than that, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember it was never an issue back then. You know, a number of years ago. And now, as I was telling you before the show, more and more people I run into are suffering from some phase of Lyme disease.
Absolutely.
This is really getting to be pervasive, isn't it?
Yeah, we have 1,500 cases of Lyme disease every year reported to CDC, and they think that's just a small percentage of what is actually out there. So it's a very serious problem.
And I guess diagnosis is tricky, isn't it, from what I've
heard? Diagnosis can be very tricky once a person has been bitten by the tick. The testing that they have, you can get false positives, false negatives. So it is very difficult. And a lot of times what the physicians do, tell you to wait for the symptoms to occur, and that can take up to 6 weeks or more. So, you know, it's kind of a waiting game that you don't really want to play, especially if it's like your child or something. And that's the way it goes right at the moment.
Now, is it true, I read somewhere, that you have to have, the tick has to have been on you for at least 24 hours before you can become infected?
For Lyme disease, it does appear to be at least 24 hours. Depends on who you talk to. Some will say it's even longer than that.
Is that right?
But it takes quite a while for it to transfer. Unfortunately, with the viral diseases that they sometimes transmit, it appears to be just a matter of minutes or, you know, probably an hour or something. So even though you kind of sit there and say it hasn't been on you very long, so therefore, for Lyme disease or something, maybe you're okay. But, you know, there's other diseases that they do transmit, the deer tick here in the state of Maine. So.
And so the two that you mentioned was babesiosis, I hope I pronounced that right, and anaplasmosis?
Anaplasmosis and babesiosis, yeah, those are both bacterial diseases.
So you're saying that if a tick gets on you, one of these other types of ailments could happen sooner than with a
in the bacterial. It's probably about the same, you know, length of time. But if it's one of the if it's the virus disease, then yeah, it's a very short period of time of feeding. They believe
less than 24 hours.
Well, way less than 24 hours. Yeah.
Okay. What are the basic ticks we're talking about here?
All right, we have like 14 different species of ticks in the state of Maine, but we're really only concerned with two major ones. That's the American dog tick, or people also refer to as the wood tick. And here in Maine, it's not associated with any diseases. So, and it's the larger tick of the two that we deal with. Then the one that's the most prevalent as far as we are concerned, humans, is the black-legged tick or the deer tick. And that can transmit several different disease organisms, as we've already mentioned. And, you know, and it's prevalent it's out all 12 months of the year. So that's why this is a great time to be talking about this. It's November, and a lot of people say, oh, gee, it's cold. They're not going to be moving. But if it's above at least 40, some people will tell you 36 degrees, the tick will be out, and we get ticks sent in 12 months of the year, the deer tick.
So they'll be active even in the cool weather?
Right. They'll be active if it's 36 degrees.
They'll still attach to you if it's 35 degrees?
Yeah. Wow. 36 plus, you know, 40 there, they're going to be out and they're active.
So dog ticks don't infect a dog?
No.
They won't?
No. I mean, they'll get on a dog, but they don't infect them with any diseases.
And if a dog tick gets on you, it's not going to infect you with anything?
The only thing it's associated with is Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Yeah.
And we don't have that close to us at all. Maybe there might be some cases in Western Massachusetts is the closest. But for the most part, there's definitely nothing associated so far in Maine.
Yeah. So if dog ticks are so benign, I wonder why do people go to the effort to get their dogs immunized against ticks?
Well, when you immunize them against fleas and ticks, you're also doing it against the deer tick too. So you know, you're getting rid of the deer tick at the same time.
So a dog could get a deer tick.
Dog can get a deer tick on it, and dogs do get Lyme disease.
They do.
They do get Lyme disease.
You
should talk to your vet if you got hunting dogs or dogs that are out in the woods. They do have a vaccine for dogs. For Lyme disease.
Not for people, but for dogs.
Not for people. They used to have one for people, but they took it off the market because of some problems.
Yeah.
And they're still they're working on one for people.
They are.
Well, for this little dog right here, I buy those little squeezes liquid.
Yep.
It's good for fleas and ticks.
Ticks,
and it's
absolutely
good for 2 or 3 months.
Yes, it is.
And she's never been bothered. We put that right on there.
Yeah, and I always recommend that you talk to your vet and get something on you. And your cat, too. But cats don't seem to be.
Well, you can buy this right in most grocery stores.
Yeah, you can.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Somebody's listening at home right now. I can see it, feel it. And they're wondering, well, my dog gets a tick on it. How do I know whether it's a dog tick or a deer tick?
you can take that tick off in that and send it right into our lab, and we'll identify it and tell you what that tick is.
Wow, yeah, you mentioned that before. This is really, this is new stuff. The lab where you work,
yep,
starting, you mentioned starting in, I guess, January,
right,
is it will be willing to test ticks for anybody who wants this right done, right?
Right. It'll be a minimal fee. If you send them out of state, we're talking $50 to have them tested. We'll be under 20, maybe as low as 10. We haven't figured out the price yet, but we're working on it, yeah.
So anybody who has a tick and wants to find out whether that particular tick has Lyme disease, babesiosis, or anaplasmosis,
yep,
you can tell the person that.
We can tell if that tick has that disease organism in it.
You can do that.
Yes.
And people can mail these to you?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
That's not available yet, but it will be in January.
January 1st. Yeah. Right now, they send them out to the University of Massachusetts or Connecticut or other places that do it, but we'll be starting January 1st.
And this is the only place in Maine where you can have
this done? This is the only place in Maine you can have the tick tested.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. How about yourself? Where can you get yourself tested?
You go back to the doctor. The doctor is the one that does the testing, but as we said, there's some problems with the test for, in humans. It's just not as accurate as it could be.
So let's say my wife gets a tick on her, and she's had that in the past, and she got the bullseye and all that. If this happens to somebody and they go to the medical facility,
mm-hmm,
doctor would say, well, how long was that tick on you, Diane? She said, well, I was gardening this morning and I found it this afternoon. I think it was only on like 5 or 6 hours. And the doctor will say, well, that's probably not much to worry about, so I'm not going to give you any antibiotics, but it might be worth her while to capture that tick, put it in a Ziploc bag, as you say, with a little alcohol in it,
yep,
and then ship it to you guys,
right,
just for the peace of mind, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk more about this. And again, we welcome your calls at 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. Okay. We're back with our guest, Professor Jim Dill, and the topic tonight, of course, is ticks. And if you have a question, any question you want to put to our guest tonight, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. We were talking, Jim, before the break about this testing service that's going to be available beginning January 1st. And again, you mentioned that there will be a minimum charge to do this. And I thought it was interesting that according to you, the turnaround time will be just 2 or 3 days. So if somebody sends you that tick, they'll find out in 2 or 3 days, possibly by email.
Right, after we receive it, yeah. If they give us an email address, we will email it back, as well as probably send them a written also. Yep.
And you will tell them whether this tick is infected with Lyme disease, babesiosis, or the other one, anaplasmosis?
Yep. Those are the first three that we'll be testing.
The big three to worry about, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, that is great.
And to send it to us, as I say, just put it in a little Ziploc bag with just a little, you can take a little piece of paper towel or just a little bit of rubbing alcohol just to keep it moist and preserve it and put it in an envelope and send it to us.
Now, if that little critter dies in the shipping process,
that's fine.
That's not a problem.
No.
Right?
Yeah. Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
That's why the alcohol is there to kind of preserve it.
Yeah. We have callers standing by. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill. Go ahead.
Hi, this is... Well, a little bit unrelated, but it's about the article in Bangor Daily that I read a while ago. It's about the chronic wasting disease up on the Quebec border,
right,
of Maine up there. Do you think it'd be any good to, like, at some point, like, open the hunting season up to either sex of deer to hunt, and maybe that would make the herd more healthier as far as getting away from the chronic wasting disease? And the potential of that coming into Maine?
I think that's a complicated question we'd have to put to, like, Nathan Bieber, the deer biologist, but certainly be a... We're going to get Nathan on here, and maybe some others. Mark McCullough, I think, knows something about chronic wasting disease. We're going to have a little round table on that, and that would be a good question to put to them when we do so, okay?
Yep. Awesome. Okay.
Yep, any questions on ticks?
I was talking to a biologist at one point. He said, I guess the turkeys do put a dent a little bit into the tick population. But I also heard if they come upon where they're territorial, they'll come upon a grouse nest, they'll stomp the eggs out and destroy the eggs of a partridge. Have you heard that? to being true, or
don't know. Don't have a clue. But yeah. we were talking about whether the heavy turkey population might do something damage to the tick population, and Jim thinks it's probably negligible. But turkeys do groom themselves, and they do peck away and eat ticks, but they're not their main forage or their main diet.
Yeah. I just found that. I didn't know that, whether the territorial is destroy a partridge nest, but
they might. They might. Yeah, very possible. I would think. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate right, your call. You. Thanks for calling. Yeah. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have another caller stacked up, do we not, Norm?
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Jim from Webster, Maine. At risk of sounding like a total idiot, I'm going to ask the stupid question anyway.
Well, welcome to the club.
What are the symptoms of Lyme's disease? What does it do to the human body?
Yeah, Lyme disease, usually what the doctors will tell you is to wait 6 weeks and the symptoms will occur. And symptoms can be, you know, it's very much flu-like, a lethargy, you know, you're really tiredness, you get joint pains, headaches. And in some cases, not all, maybe about 50%, you'll get some type of a rash. It's often referred to as a bull's-eye rash, but it's not always a bull's-eye. It can just be a red rash, and the thing to think about is the rash does not have to be associated where the bite was. So if you got bitten, let's say, in the back, you could actually have the rash on your leg. So that's one of the things that, again, throws people. So there's a lot of different, you know, symptoms, irritability, and lethargy, and I'll give you a quick story. We had a young man that came into our office a couple years ago, and he had a tick, and it was a deer tick, and it was partially engorged. And it was like 4:15 on a Friday afternoon. He was in a real panic, and he gave it to us, and we identified it. But, of course, we didn't test it that time. And his problem was that he had taken it off from his 7-day-old baby. And the doctor said, here's what you got to do. You got to just watch the baby to see the symptoms. And the two symptoms he gave him was lethargy and irritability. Now, if a 7-day-old baby, number one, you don't know what they're like anyway, and what do the babies do? They cry and they sleep. So how would you recognize, you know? So, I mean, that's why the poor guy was just beside himself. But we got him straightened out. He sent it to Massachusetts and had it tested, and I think he was fine. It didn't have So, you know, that type of thing, he could have brought that in. If we were testing, we'd have taken it right there, and we would have had him, you know, by – you know, within a couple of days, he'd have known the answer.
Right.
Well, it sounds like old age to me. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Thank you. Any other callers stacked up?
That is it.
Oh, good. Okay. So we talked about the testing in the lab. One of the things that was interesting, we sometimes talk when you're not hearing us during the commercial break, and Jim was telling us about, Bob asked him about the bite, how does that work? They're like a mosquito. What is the bite process for deer tick?
Yeah, when a tick gets on you, you know, they can move fast, but when they're on you, they move very slowly, so usually you don't even feel them crawling on you. And when they're ready to bite, they excrete a little anesthetic type of material, and so they bite. So number one, now you don't feel the bite. Once they're in, then they release an anticoagulant so the blood flows so they can feed. And just as they do that too, then what they do is they actually excrete another material, which is like a super glue, and glues their mouth parts in place.
Isn't that incredible?
So that's why they're so difficult.
Isn't it, huh?
That's why they're difficult to remove. When you think about it, when most people remove them, they leave the head or the mouth parts behind.
Yeah.
But when they're ready to release, then they just dissolve that little bit of glue and they go away. So
vicious little critters.
Yeah,
like a mosquito, really. Yeah. That's what they do, really.
Well, they do, but of course they don't glue themselves in place. Yeah. Like
no,
this
they
guy
don't
does.
Do that.
No, they don't do that. So that's why they're so hard to remove, and that's why, you know, you don't wipe them off or they don't get...
Yeah.
You know, they stick right there for days.
Nasty little buggers.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another caller standing by. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill, and we're talking ticks. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I had a question about the deer themselves. If a deer's been infected with one of the deer ticks, can you still eat the meat on a deer?
Yes. It's basically two things that I would give you for an answer on that. the Maine Medical Center, their tick lab down there, they've been testing during hunting season. They've done hunter checks where they take the blood from the body cavity and they test it, and they found that a large percentage of the deer in the state of Maine all test positive for Lyme disease. So they've been, you know, infected at some point in time, or at least have a titer that says that they've had the organism in them. So number one, yes, you can eat the meat. There's been no indication of any type that eating the meat from a Lyme infected deer transmits it to humans.
You don't want to cook it, though, right?
You want to cook it, yeah. You wouldn't. Well, you probably wouldn't want to eat it raw, but as you say that, the other thing that I do recommend to hunters is to wear disposable rubber gloves when they gut the deer out, because the question then becomes: if you should cut yourself, with your knife while you're gutting that deer, you know, and that deer's infected with Lyme disease, and there's a transfer of blood to your cut, is it possible? Probably not. But it's safer to make sure that you do that. And there's other diseases that could be associated anyway with gutting out a deer. And I know certainly all of us, as me, you know, you're up to your armpits in the blood when you're cleaning out a deer. You don't think about that. But
yeah.
I usually recommend, disposable gloves and, you know, just make sure you bring them out when you get done.
Yeah. Good good advice.
One other part of the question, if I can, is back in the old days, they used to treat the infection with vibromycin or tetracycline, one of the bacterial static drugs. Do they still do that?
Yes. It's doxycycline is usually what the material of choice is now. But it's a penicillin type of a drug, antibiotic that they treat it with early. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.
Yep. Okay. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Do we have another caller stacked up?
We sure do.
Okay. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill. Go ahead. Good evening.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello. I had asked a question about where this place was going to be in January, available to send a pig in for testing.
Yep.
And the man you have in there, he didn't give an address or a name for the place.
Yep. It's the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Diagnostic and Research Lab, but you just send it to DRL is the easy way to do it, and it's 17 Godfrey Drive in Orono. It's a brand new $12 million lab. We do tick testing. We do plant disease diagnosis, insect identification. The animal disease diagnostic lab is also in that facility, as well as fish research disease is in the same lab.
It's called University of Maine.
Yeah. Diagnostic and Research Lab.
Okay, diagnostic. Okay. 17 Godfrey
Drive.
Drive, okay.
In Orono.
Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We have another caller stacked up, but we're going to take a short commercial break here, and then we'll take you, caller. And Bob Lehman wants to tell you about General Appliance and Brewer.
Hey, how could you not go into General Appliance and Brewer, Paul, for all of your appliance needs, whether they be electrical or gas?
Only place to go.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, they're experts on gas appliances and the repair of these appliances
as
well.
Yes, sir.
And they have all the parts right there, if you need any parts, or if you need a repairman. They'll tell Andy over there, of course, Andy's a magic man, as you know. Just one foot in the door and the appliance is fixed, just like that.
They call that guy Houdini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have all the top of the line, what do they got? What can you name the top of the line, like Cervelle. Cervelle, Cervelle and all the other ones.
If you have a remote camp like I do, Cervelle is the way to go, right, Norm?
It sure is.
There is no other refrigerator for the woods, right?
Good quality, can't get much better.
Darn right.
And they have used ones over there, too.
And new ones.
Save
as well.
A lot of money.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
No and used.
Yep.
And repairs. How can you not go over there and get things? You've been over there and you've had repairs.
Many times.
And you bought any. They don't come to your camp, but they will.
Well, I go see Al, and Al tells me how to do it, and then I go fix it on my own.
What's the matter with that?
It's great.
That's great, isn't
it? He doesn't charge for that
either. No, the big thing over there, what the big sale over there is? Compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. Yeah, and of course, with compost toilets, there's no running water, no plumbing, no septic, no leach field to bother with, and no environmental problems. And the big thing is no mosquitoes.
No mosquitoes.
That's right, Paul. That's no mosquoes.
Right. No deer ticks either.
And no deer ticks. That's another thing. I didn't think of that.
I know.
I talked to Al on the phone.
And that's not a good place to get a deer tick either.
No, and of course, they sell our books over there. You walk in the door.
You bet.
And your books, my books are right there.
Yes, sir.
You know, I talked to Al on the phone the other day, and he said he still has a bunch of Empire heaters with a real good sale on them.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, that's great.
You can't beat them. I've used them.
They are. Yeah. They're tops. Yep. Okay. General Appliance and Brewer. We patronize them, and they sponsor our show, and we are part of one of our sponsors. By the way, Old Town Trading Post is also one of our sponsors, and you should patronize them as well.
That's right.
They do great work. Okay. We have another caller waiting to put a question to you, Jim, so let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question for you. A lot of people think that the deer tick and the winter moose tick are the same thing that's affecting the moose up north. Is that the same tick that we deal with in southern and central Maine, or is it a different tick?
It's completely a different tick. The deer tick or the black-legged tick is a several host tick, and it takes 2 years to complete its life cycle. The winter tick, or some people refer to it as the moose tick, is a single host and has a very short life cycle. We have a lot of hunters that come in October, especially if they've gone through some raspberry patches and that type of thing, and they will be covered with tiny winter ticks. I mean, literally hundreds of them. And they really panic, but the thing is, they may try to bite you or something, but they do not stay on humans. But what they're looking for is that moose. And once they hit on that moose, then they will stay on that moose all the way through until April. And then in April, they'll drop off, lay their eggs. The eggs then hatch again in the fall and start the cycle all over again. So it's got completely different. And the moose can have, you know, tens of thousands of ticks on them. And that's what's causing the problem, especially in western Maine and New Hampshire. The sheer numbers the anemic and, exposure because they rub the hair off and, they're not feeding as well. So the calves has a huge mortality because of the winter tick. So they're completely different species of ticks.
I get you. Well, it was my son's first moose hunt. He was, I think, 15 years old. Got himself a big fat cow. It was one in the November hunt. And when we were eviscerating the animal, I noticed there was a bunch of parasites on the heart. And when we tagged it in Ashland, they said, yeah, there's a few parasites here and there. The entire moose was tainted with kind of looked like frog-like pustules in the meat. And I didn't know if it was just from regular parasites from a tainted moose, or if it was from the winter ticks and it was their eggs for the next year.
No, definitely wasn't from the winter tick. I know there's some flukes and other things that you can find in moose, but it's definitely nothing to do with the tick in that case.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Appreciate your call.
Glad to hear. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we've talked about that before on the show, that you can, if you cook the meat, I think you'll be all right anyway.
Yeah,
did you think so?
Yeah, although I was thinking, not talking, but thinking while Jim was talking, I'm an avid wild meat fan, as you know. I eat elk, I eat moose, I eat deer, and I like it really rare. And I was it's the way I like it. And I was beginning, when we were talking about that, I don't know whether I'm going to continue to do that or not. I don't know. Interesting. Okay, we have more callers coming in. We'll take a call here in just a second. One of the terms that you use while we were talking before the show is questing.
Yep.
And I thought that was interesting. What is questing with regard to ticks?
Yeah. What ticks do, and we'll stick with the deer tick, even though most ticks do it the same way, they hold on. They'll climb up depending on which stage they're in. If it's the larval tick, they'll just crawl up on blades of grass, and they look for mice and chipmunks and little red squirrels and that type of thing. And what they do is they hang on with their hind legs, and they take their two front legs, and they just kind of wave them out in front of them until something fuzzy comes by. And when it fuzzies, they just grab onto it, And once they grab onto it, then they go and find a place to eat. So because of that, we use what we call tick drags. And basically all it is, it looks like a flag. You got it on a post, on a pole, and it's a light-colored cloth, could be flannel or woolen or whatever, but something that's kind of fuzzy. So you just drag it along wherever you're looking for the ticks, and the ticks, of course, feel this. They grab onto it, and why it's light-colored is just so it's easier to see the tick when it's on there.
So that's how you collect ticks for testing?
That's how we collect ticks for whatever, you know, just to do a sample, to see how many ticks there are in the area, or if we want to collect them for sampling or whatever other use we want them.
So. Boy, your line of work. You must check yourself very carefully at the end of the day.
You have to.
I would think so.
I've been treated twice.
Have you really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm in the field, and I still, you know, manage to.
So do you get hazardous duty pay?
No, unfortunately not. No.
All right. Good evening. We have another caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Yes. Hello, Jim.
Yes.
I'm a critical care nurse, work in one of the largest hospitals right in the local area.
Yep.
And I work in the critical coronary care unit, the heart unit.
Yep.
And what we're seeing a lot of now is that people in their 50s, we usually check them. They'll come in on the heart rate, 30s, 40s, low 50s. And we check them for Lyme's disease instead of putting a pacemaker in. Usually if it's an older person, they'll put a pacemaker in because their heart just wore out. But if we see them in the 50s, we're checking them. And 9 out of 10 times, they're Lyme positive.
Yep.
3 or 4 days of antibiotics, the heart rate will pick back up to usual. But that's one of the symptoms. They'll come in with, they'll have some fatigue, lethargy, you know, low blood pressure because the heart rate's only 35, 45.
Yep.
And it's due to the Lyme's disease.
Right, exactly. And we find that in some younger folks, too.
Yes. 20s, 30s, whatever.
Yep, exactly. It's not just the older people that you can get it, right?
Right. I bet we're seeing it. Oh, maybe I'm thinking when I worked 10 times last year, so probably maybe 20 or 30 times. We've seen it, so
yeah.
I just wanted to, you know, I had an old infectious disease doctor said there was nothing to Lyme disease, it was all a hoax, there's nothing to it, nothing to it, and I said, well, people are being affected by it.
Right.
So
yeah, a lot of places, like you say, don't recognize, especially chronic Lyme disease, as being, you know, real either, so, but you're right.
Right. So, we're seeing that elderly people and come in with a lot of different symptoms, A to Z for symptoms.
Yep. How do you treat it?
The dicloxacillin, antibiotics. Sometimes I don't know if it's treatable if it's that chronic or that far gone. But it's definitely an issue.
Right.
People got to check themselves, and this new tick center is it's good because my brother lives in southern Maine, and he's got a standing order for it instead of going in the doctor every time he gets a tick on him. He lives down Woolwich, Maine, across from Bath, and it's just horrendous down there.
Yep.
The ticks are unbelievable.
Yep.
If we turkey hunt down there, we check each other. You know, we strip off in the garage and look at each other. Hopefully nobody's watching. It really is. It's that bad down there.
Yeah.
I don't even want to hunt anymore because it's that bad.
Yeah. Wow, southern coastal Maine is that way, and I've heard a lot of people tell me they've stopped turkey hunting because of where you sit, right on that field forest interface.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst place for them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. We have another caller standing by, right?
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Fine, sir.
Good.
Hey, I've got a couple of questions. Well, first, I've noticed ticks mostly on my dog. I've noticed a couple on me he probably brought in. But there's two different types. One of them has, like, zigzag lines going down on each side of it. And the other is like an oval, only tapered on one end more.
Right.
Are either of those deer ticks?
Yeah, what you probably got is you've probably got the if it's a larger mottled tick, you know, that you, when you look at the back of it, it's kind of a pattern on it. That's usually the dog tick. The deer tick is about a third of the size of the dog tick, and it is just got a black shield on the back, black legs, and then kind of a little reddish-brown area to it. So it's more of a nondescript colored and much smaller. And those are probably the two ticks that your dog is getting on them.
Yeah, I think so. And now I've noticed more prevalent in the last 8 years or so. I was down in southern Maine living, and also up here in the Western Mountains. What do you think is we've had such an influx of them by 10,000 fold over the past so many years?
Right.
What causes it?
Yeah, I think there's several causes to it. I said one of them is climate change a little bit. And what's happening there, you're extending warmer weather into the fall, and the springs are earlier on the other end. And because of that, it gives better survival of the ticks. And we've done such a great job of deer management in the state of Maine. We've got a nice deer herd that moves around, and a deer moves a long ways. So you can get deer ticks or dog ticks on the deer, and they can move those around and drop them pretty good too. So I think that's been part of it. There's questions about birds bringing them in and moving them up. So there's lots of different reasons that they've moved.
Typically the climate has been the same, since the last ice age, 10,000 or so years ago. And it just seems to be in the last, 10 to 20 years, we've had this big influx in the
climate. Caller, we're up against the clock. We appreciate your input, and thanks for listening to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
Thanks.
We are just about out of time, and Jim, it's great to have you here.
Yep.
You want to come back next week?
Yeah,
the week after? Anyway, we really appreciate you. You've been a font of information that's been very helpful, and I know we will be asking you to come back after a reasonable amount of time, but you've been great. Appreciate you coming down.
Anytime.
And good luck with your new laboratory.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
All right.
All right, next week, Bob and I will be away, and Jim Thorne is going to co-host. And so join Jim next week, and Bob and I will see you in a couple weeks right here on
Maine Outdoors.